This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Hey, good morning, everyone. We're back, and this morning's guest is Keith Whiteford with Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. We're going to talk about eels, but first I'd like to tell you that a couple of weeks ago we had Letha Grimes on here with Becoming an Outdoors Woman, and we offered two entries to Tim Sherman's Tackle Box, Tim Sherman's Striper class and Bass class. And Michelle Ness is going to striper class, and Alyssa Henn is going to bass class, thanks to the fine work of Becoming an Outdoors Woman and Patty or Patricia Handy from the Department of Natural Resources. They actually did a random drawing of a list of all their participants from the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program. So those ladies are going to be headed to striper school and bass class. So, okay, Tim, hope you got that email, and I'm sure you did. All right, Keith, good morning. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning, Alan. Doing well.
Good, good. You're on the Eastern Shore this morning.
That's right, in Centerville.
Centerville. Yeah, it's warm up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we killed some geese there Monday. It was a fine day Monday, I can tell you that. So.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, man, yeah. Lots of snow geese up there, too.
Uh-huh.
All right. We're talking about the American eel. Now, look, when I was a kid, I'm fishing the Juniata River up in Pennsylvania, and we're fishing at night, and we're fishing for catfish and whatever else bites, and I get a bite, and I try to reel this fish in, and it's a strong fish, and it goes under a rock. So I just let the rod set. This fish swims out. I start reeling again. It swims under another rock in the river. Finally, I get this fish in, and it's an eel about 3 feet long. How the heck did an American eel get into the Juniata River? And it wasn't the only one,
right?
But then I caught an eel in Delaware Bay, and you know, same fish or what's the deal?
It is the same fish. It
well, how's that happen? Tell me about the biology of the American eel, in case people who catch them in fresh water or in the tidal rivers or in the Chesapeake Bay or in the off the coast. What the heck are these things?
Okay, I'll give you a little rundown, a little life history lesson here. So all the eels that are in our streams and bay are all from one population. They have a huge species range. The species range extends from the southern tip of Greenland all along the Atlantic coast all the way to northeast South America, as well as up the Mississippi River.
No subspecies?
No subspecies, no.
It's the eel, the American eel.
American eel, correct.
There's only one of them. Okay.
There's only one, right. They are known as catadromous, which means they spend most of their life in freshwater or estuarine water, and then they head back to the ocean to spawn.
Okay.
They spawn in an area known as the Sargasso Sea, which is part of the Atlantic Ocean, and that is south of Bermuda and east of Bahamas.
Okay.
So once they spawn, the adults are suspected to die, and after the eggs are hatched, they spend about 1 year, approximately 1 year, getting pushed by the Gulf Stream back to the continent, and then they'll enter our coast as glass eels. And then transform into alvers or small yellow eels. Then they'll remain as yellow eels the majority of their life until they are ready to head back to the Sargasso Sea to spawn. So just about all the eels we see in their, you know, fishing or all the bait, like the eels we use for bait.
Like the pencil eels.
Are yellow eels.
Okay.
And once they actually out-migrate to spawn, they're considered silver eels. So they go through a body transformation and head out to the Sargasso Sea to spawn. They're besides their geographic range, and obviously they have a multitude of life stages, their diversity of habitats quite unique as well. They can live in lakes, ponds, streams, rivers throughout the estuary and even the open ocean. So they're pretty pretty unique, remarkable creature in the bay. A lot of people don't realize. You know, I didn't realize, even though I was an avid fisherman as a kid, and not until I was in college that I realized how complex, you know, and how interesting these creatures are.
Now, you talked about the first stage of their life, you know, as the first year or so, or how long do they remain these little glass eels?
Well, once they hatch, that's actually another life stage. It's called a leptocephalus.
Okay.
And as they reach the continental shell, they'll basically, they're kind of like a flattened, like willow-shaped, still like in the shape of an eel, but they're kind of flattened laterally.
Did you say a willow leaf?
Like a willow leaf, correct.
Okay, sure.
And then as they approach the continental shelf, they basically become more cylindrical in shape. And the gland, basically, there's like little see-through pins or...
Yeah, they're transparent. I mean,
once they reach our coast and then head up into the estuary and rivers, it takes only about a month or so, and they start becoming pigmented. And of course, their food changes that what they eat, and then they're considered alvers. You know, alvers basically just a small yellow eel.
Okay.
So they don't last too long in the glass eel stage.
So they do go through quite a transformational lifestyle. That's for sure. Now, some of us have seen these shows. I'm not sure if it's on History or Animal Planet or one of them, where these guys are actually harvesting the glass eels, and it's off the coast of Maine. And I believe Maine is the only state that allows the harvest of glass eels. Is that right?
It's Maine and South Carolina, but South Carolina's fishery is extremely minimal. I think it's like 1,000 pounds annually.
Mm-hmm.
Where Maine is, you know, like 20,000 or 25,000 pounds annually.
25,000 pounds of little tiny eels that weigh 1/4 ounce apiece.
Yeah, less than that. Probably about 0.2 grams.
Okay, I don't know what that is in ounces, but that's sounds
2,500 to a pound.
2,500 glass eels to a pound.
Right.
And the pound of glass eels sells for lots of money.
$2,000 now.
Yeah, and there's a market where?
Largely in Japan, but also in Europe and Asia. But the aquaculture is huge, so they ship these, you know, to eel farms, and they grow them out to market size, you know, typically within about 12 or 16 months.
So there is a aquaculture program for eels. Is that what you're telling me?
Oh yeah, I mean, the demand worldwide for, I mean, obviously it's a, here culturally it's not looked at as a desirable food item, but in Europe and Asia it's a delicacy, and the natural production can't keep up with the demand, so they raise farm raise the majority of the eels over there. I don't want to say it's above like 90% of the eels that they eat are actually farm raised.
Okay, because back in the 80s when I first moved in Maryland, early 80s, I was down Kent Island somewhere, and one of the eelers came in, and he had eels in his tank. However they transport them. And he was dumping them into, they were going directly into a truck.
Right.
And the truck was headed somewhere. And I said, where's your market? I mean, where are these going? He said, eventually they will wind up in Egypt. So, okay, that's pretty cool.
Right.
But, you know, that was my first experience with commercial eeling. You know, I had no idea there was even a market for them. And then, of course, as I you know, knew more about Maryland, you know, they became popular for trot line bait, crab bait, and that type of thing,
right.
And, you know, salted eel and that type of thing. And now the population, or at one time the population was declining pretty well, wasn't it?
Right.
Okay.
Well, on a coastwide basis, it has been declining for a while. That when you had... basically, in the late 60s and 70s, the export market, they basically were able to transport the eels across the country, you know, a little better, and that increased the demand in the market for our eels, you know, outside of know, crab trout line bait or striped bass bait. Now there's this huge food market overseas, and
right,
you know, it's just created a big demand and demand for our market. So for 10 to 15 or 20 years, I mean, through up and down the coast, the eels were getting hammered. You know, basically they hadn't seen that pressure in a long time, and
right,
and that coupled with, you know, over the course of time, you know, there's been a lot of dam construction, so you know, much of their habitat was, you know, restricted as a result of the dam.
Yeah, they're not going to make it. They're not going to make it into the Juniata River.
Right.
Right.
We had, you know, with all this effort that was, you know, put on the eels as well, these other kind of cumulative impacts. So they, after probably the late 70s into the early 80s, this was like probably the heaviest time of fishing up and down the coast. You know, population, you know, really kind of declined after that. And then
right,
taking a little while to come back. And it has come back in the last, last 10 years from a coastwide basis, but it's still from some very low levels. You know, there's still localized areas, you know, like the Hudson River and some South Atlantic states where, you know, populations are still at very small fractions of what they were, you know, back in the early 80s.
Back in the heyday, yeah.
And Maryland's population has, you know, we've actually done, I guess, relatively well, you know, compared to other states. And And we rebounded nicely from the late 90s and the early 2000s. And, you know, from some of the surveys we run, we have in the indices that we track, we track the population with these indices. And in the last 10 years, they've all tracked positively. And we've had some, we have more landings here. You know, we land about 50% of the coastwide landings just here in Maryland.
In the Chesapeake Bay.
In the Chesapeake Bay, yeah.
So Maryland, we got the stripers and we got the eels.
Right.
That's pretty cool, folks. And I don't know. Let me say this again. Our Chesapeake Bay, we have 50% of the landings of the coastwide harvest here right, in Maryland. Now, these eels are not usually found domestically here in Maryland. Striped bass, we have a huge commercial catch of striped bass, probably the biggest in the country, here in our right, little state of Maryland in the Chesapeake Bay. What a treasure we have.
You're right. Absolutely.
So, all right. Very good. Matt, or Keith, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back after these messages. I have to tell the folks about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Folks, Clyde's is getting ready for fishing season. The stuff's coming in every day. All the new tackle, all the new lures, all the trout bait, all the panfish stuff. Get down there and see Jim if you want to catch some white perch. He knows how to do it. And they can fix you up with, you know, line and terminal tackle, all the lures you need for striper fishing. You name it, they've got it. And don't forget, they're a full-line Browning dealer. They have all the firearms, handguns, a new line of shotguns for personal protection, ammunition, except 22s. You can't find 22s anywhere, but, you know, Clyde's has got everything you need for fishing and hunting. Been around since 1957. They've been doing it a long, long time. Check the website, ClydeSports.com, or stop by the store, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Phone number, 410-242-6108, 410-242-6108. And don't forget that fishing hotline, 410-247-3474, 247-FISH.
The Wild is calling. The Great American Outdoor Show, presented by Outdoor Channel, is coming to the Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, February 1st to the 9th, celebrating the outdoor traditions treasured by millions of Americans, with celebrity appearances from Michael Wandel, Lee and Tiffany, and many more. Plus tons of events for the entire family, including the NRA Country Jam. Start your adventure now by getting your tickets at GreatAmericanOutdoorShow.org.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and last longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck like I did, with a Linex spray-on bed liner.
I enjoy the memories of my hunts as much as I enjoy hunting. The best way to honor the game that you have taken is by preserving your trophy through taxidermy. My taxidermist is Don Travis of Travis Taxidermy near Chestertown. Don has mounted over a dozen ducks for me, my best buck, and my pronghorn antelope with skill and craftsmanship. I wouldn't have it any other way, and neither should you. With over 40 years of experience, Travis Taxidermy has completed specimens from wood ducks to whitetails for thousands of Maryland hunters to the exotic big game animals of Africa and Alaska and beyond. But he would just as soon see you with your buck or your youngster's first goose. Is Travis Taxidermy the cheapest guy in town? No, sir, he's not. Nor is he the most expensive. But in my opinion, he's just the best. For 40 years, Don and his crew have been transforming skin and bones into magnificent creations that will let you relive the memory of your hunt for a lifetime. Call Travis Taxidermy, 410-778-4107. Stop by the showroom or visit TravisTaxidermy.com. Travis Taxidermy, 410-778-4107, exceeding your expectations for over 40 years. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg has taken care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. Hunters, you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. By donating your doe, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org.
I'd love to spit some beech nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. 'Cause you can't stomp about and you can't make them run, but when them old boys raise on shotgun, we say grace and we say ma'am, and you ain't into that, but don't give a damn. We're from North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
All right. Hey, we're with Keith Whiteford for the Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service, and we're talking about eels. We're talking about glass eels, yellow eels, silver eels, all the same thing, right?
That's right, all the same species.
Yep.
Different life stages.
Different life stages, and there's how many different life stages do we have altogether? Five or six?
Well, let's see, at the leptocephalus, once they hatch, the glass eel, the alver stage, yellow eel, and the silver eel stage. So I guess that'll be five, correct?
I guess so. Okay, great. Well, and economically, they are important to our commercial watermen because we do harvest 50% of the eels on the coast that are harvested on the coast. There's definitely a market for them. What do eels sell for? Do we know?
Yeah, basically the food eels, the eels that are probably about 16 inches and larger, our commercial. Of course, it varies from year to year, but they get about $3 a pound, the commercial guys, for the large food eels. The smaller eels, they'll range from usually $1 to $1.50. Now, if you find like a local bait shop, you know, that sells them a dollar a piece,
yeah,
they may be able to give you $4 or $5 a pound for the, you know, the small bait eels. But of course, they may not be able to sell all the eels they catch to
the local
bait shop. So
yeah,
they have to go to the larger dealer who buys them.
Sure.
Quantity,
and it does I used to work at a shop, manage a shop that sold eels. And, you know, the eelers would come in and they'd have the pencil, what they called pencil eels at that point.
Right.
And, you know, we weren't allowed to sell them until the until you were allowed to, you know, use eels for bait. And that was, you know, typically during the summer. Very, very popular bait in the upper bay as far as the pencil eels are concerned for striped bass.
Right.
And they love to eat them, and the guys love to catch them. So, you know, love to catch stripers on live eels. Matter of fact, Kathy, my wife, caught a big striper one time over in Delaware Bay on an eel, and that was great for her. I think the only striper she probably ever caught. So, yeah, that's amazing. Well, I mean, big one. I think it was an illegal fish. So at that time, but so how do they catch an eel? How does an eeler catch an eel? How commercial eeler catch an eel?
About 98% of our commercial catch are. The commercial guys use eel pots. So they're most of our guys use like a cylindrical pot that's about 2 feet long, maybe about 10 inches. The mouth is about 10 inches wide, has a series of funnels.
Right.
Similar to like a minnow trap.
Like a minnow trap, yeah.
And once they get in, it's baited inside. Once the eels get in, they have a difficult time getting back out.
Right.
Yeah, they do fish some. Square traps, which are similar to like a crab trap with a smaller mesh, but the more common gear are the cylindrical pots.
So I'm trying to learn here. So if I ask a stupid question, please forgive me. But
you're right.
These how many eel pots can an eeler put out in a day and fish? I mean, do they fish them like a crab pot? Do they have a buoy on them? How does that work?
The smaller guys, the guys that don't. You know, I guess there's some guys out there that have like long lines that can fish up to, you know, 500 to 700 pots.
So almost like a trot line. So almost like a trot line operation.
Yeah, exactly.
With all these small pots on.
Some guys that go out there and fish 30 or 50 pots individually.
Right.
You know, with an individual float, and they pull them up. I mean, they're kind of the small-time eelers. Larger-time eelers have...
Yeah,
huge strings of them.
Sure. Is there a size limit to these eels?
There is. It actually was raised in the fall. Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, as part of their fishery management plan, approved an addendum, and they increased the minimum size to 9 inches, and it was 6 inches. But our minimum mesh size for the pots that we fish don't typically catch eels, less than 9 inches. Anyway.
Right. Yeah,
so that's almost the bottom end of the size of the size range that our pots catch anyway. So
I got you. How many guys do this? I mean, how many eelers are there? Do they have to have a, you know, like a commercial fishing license, or do they?
Yes, they do.
Is there an eel license? I don't know. Is there an eel license?
No, you can, just as long as you have like a tidal fish license.
Right.
You're allowed to eel. So there's not an eel specific license.
Okay.
There's currently like 60 eel potters. I think there's like 85 or 90 commercial licenses that report eel, but some of them they're kind of incidental.
I think.
Right, incidental.
The word you're looking for.
Catch. You know, hook and line and catch a couple eels or catch them on a pike net or pound net.
Right.
But they got eel potters, or they're targeting, you know, specifically eels, and there's about 60 of those.
Okay. So how many eels do we catch? How many eels do the commercial guys catch in pounds? Do we know?
Over the last 10 years, we've averaged about 400,000 pounds. And in the last 4 years, we've averaged close to 600,000 pounds.
600,000 pounds.
Right. And when it comes to this, is, you know, since it's not a huge...
That's 300 tons. That's 300 tons of eels. That's 300 tons of eels. Is that correct? 600,000 pounds?
Yeah, yes.
300 tons of eels?
Right.
In Chesapeake Bay?
That's correct. And that doesn't include Maryland. I mean, it doesn't include Virginia either. That's just Maryland's portion of the Chesapeake Bay.
That's a lot of eels.
It is a lot of eels.
Have you ever eaten one?
I do. Every year I try it.
And you try? Can you get?
I try.
Can you get through one?
Yeah, actually, they're not. They really aren't bad at all.
I guess they'd be like a catfish. I'm sure they'd be similar to a catfish. You know, I mean, back in the day when you catch them and the ladies would say, "Oh, my husband caught an eel one time and he skinned it. We put it in the pan. It curled up in the pan when it was cooking."
Right.
You know, those type of deals. So.
I remember the first time I tried it. This is probably 10 years ago. I started working with eels, and
yeah.
some of the eels we catch, we actually sacrifice them and to age them. We have to actually cut their heads open and they have ear bones.
Yeah, the otolith out.
Correct. And then we age them. So we actually look at like the rings or the otolith, like similar to the rings on a tree.
Yeah.
And so you unfortunately have to sacrifice them for science, and you have these eels. So knowing that that's a delicacy in Europe and Asia, you think, well, maybe they really are good, even though they you have a kind of a negative connotation. You're kind of
like a
up.
Snakehead. Who would eat that ugly looking thing?
Right.
Yeah. We love monkfish.
That's right.
Ugh. Google that one time. See what they look like.
and took them home, and I remember putting them on the pan, and they were still squirming around in the pan. I guess the like nerve. It was. Really not appetizing.
A little unnerving, huh?
But they actually didn't taste bad. It's just the cleaning them and getting over the fact that they were still squirming a little bit.
That's pretty funny. I'm gonna suggest to you my catfish skinning trick, and you can try it on eels and see how it works. You know, people say, my granddad used to nail a catfish to a tree and get the pliers out and cut around its head and skin it. Well, try this, Keith.
Okay.
Take that eel, just take some hot water in your sink, and kind of hit that eel with the hot water. It'll kill them instantly, and it makes the skin exceptionally easy to take off of them.
Okay.
It just, you can still cut them, but you'll peel it like a banana. And let me know how that works out for you.
Okay.
All right. Try that. If it works with a catfish, it ought to work with an eel. No scales on them, right?
They do have scales. They're very, you can't feel them. And of course, they're covered with slime, but they actually do have scales.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's new to me then. I didn't know that. I thought they were like a catfish in that regard. So, all right. Well, look, we're going to take a short break again, and we'll be right back with Keith Whiteford. Anybody has a question on eels, something that I'm not asking or something you'd like to know, we got the man here. And, you crabbers, trotliners, salted eel, that used to be the standard. Not anymore so much. So we'll be right back.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Marcy Norton. Attention, early bird tax filers. The IRS will start processing federal tax returns on January 31st. If you're in a hurry to get your money back, who isn't? Here are some ideas on how to speed up the process. Many software companies are expected to start accepting electronic returns this month, then holding them until the IRS system opens January 31st. The IRS will not process any returns before then, so there's no advantage to filing on paper before the opening date. Consider filing electronically and telling the IRS to deposit your refund directly into your bank account. Tax experts agree this is smarter than sending in a paper return and waiting for a government check. If you need some reliable tips for free, try IRS Publication 17, which is appropriately titled Your Federal Income Tax. It may not answer all your questions, but it includes many helpful examples. You can see it online at the IRS website, irs.gov. This is the Wall Street Journal Report.
Hey, Bob, how's business? Is the new website helping?
Not good. I can't figure out how to get the website finished. How did you do it?
Easy. I called web.com. They built my website for free.
Wow, free? Really? Web.com?
Yep, and in just 7 days. Then they promoted it on all the search engines.
Like Google, Yahoo, and Bing?
Exactly. And web.com has helped grow my business so much, I had to bring on new staff.
Hey, if web.com did it for you, they're perfect for me.
Web.com can build your website for free in as little as 7 days. If after 30 days you're happy with your new website, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for just one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing. Call now, 855-747-SITE. 855-747-SITE. 855-747-7483. Or go to web.com/radio. There is no upfront charge for building the website, after which the ongoing fee applies. Rights to the website are relinquished upon cancellation unless...
Dragging a line, a trot line, a trolling line, an eel pot line, or dragging the line. Keith Whiteford's with us from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources. We're talking about eels, and we got some folks on the line that want to talk about eels. We got Mike in Baltimore. Good morning, Mike. How you doing? Hello, Mike.
Yeah, how you doing?
You're up. Go ahead.
Good. Yeah. Alan, I'm calling in defense of the eel. When I was a child,
Were we attacking the eel?
No, I'm defending the eel.
Yeah, I'm saying, were we attacking the eel?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Go ahead.
That's cool. No, but my uncle had a smokehouse, okay, and he used to smoke eels.
Yeah.
Okay, and they were excellent. So if you find somebody that still smokes eels, you ought to try them.
I will. Yeah, I will. If I ever catch one, I will. Absolutely.
And he used to smoke carp.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever had smoked carp. I'm not a big fan of carp, but he used to smoke carp too.
I've had, believe it or not, I've had smoked marlin.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty dang good. But, I mean, not that anybody's going to eat a marlin out of Ocean City, but somebody did catch one, keep it, and have it smoked, and it was absolutely excellent. So, yeah.
Smoked eel and a smokehouse. If you find somebody to have it and try it, and get back with us and let us know how it is. I thought it was excellent.
Okay, I will do that.
Well, thanks a lot.
All right, buddy. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. See ya. There he goes. Defending eating eels. Oh, I see what he was saying. We said it's a little tough to cook them, right, Keith? So
right.
He's going to smoke them, which, you know, is good if you can get them lit. Let's talk to Ted, Kent Island. Good morning, Ted. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. How about you?
I'm doing great, you know. But you see the salted eels on the trout line all the time, and it's getting kind of really tough to get a hold of them the last couple of years. And I'm thinking, actually, you know, now we're listening, guys. Obviously, live on Kent Island. Thinking of getting my own eels, but the question is, I don't know where I would put my pots out. What I mean, are they in the creeks? Are they in the deep? Or I mean, where exactly are people getting the eels at?
Well, somebody's catching 300 tons of them a year, Keith. Maybe you can help that guy.
That's right.
That would be Ted.
You can actually, if you. With a recreational license, you can actually fish 10 pots and catch up to 25 eels a day. But you can throw the pots pretty much anywhere. I mean, they're all over. They're not allowed to fish in fresh water, so you have to fish in tidal water. But pretty much anywhere you can throw a pot in any one of our rivers, you have a high likelihood of catching an eel.
Okay, so it's not necessarily like throwing up in the creeks and.
No, they're not. They're basically all over. They're all over the place. They're not like
all over.
They're in one. Yeah, I mean, they may congregate like as it gets colder in the fall. They may head to deeper channels and such. But they're basically spread out throughout
the awesome.
Day.
Any suggestions on bait?
Excuse me.
Any suggestions on what's a good bait?
The most popular bait are razor clams for the commercial guys. Of course, razor clams in the last few years are extremely expensive.
Extremely, yes.
I have a suggestion, Ted.
Tell me.
Beef or chicken liver.
Really?
Yep. I heard a story when I was a kid. We used to vacation in southern New Jersey, and these guys would take a burlap bag and fill it with liver. And they would lower it on a rope off their bridges. And the eels would come after the blood in the liver, and they would actually get their little tiny teeth tangled up in the burlap, and they'd pull the burlap bag up on the rope with the eels hanging on it. If you pulled it up fast enough, they wouldn't all drop off, and you'd be able to catch some, dump them in a bucket.
I like that idea.
Isn't that easy?
Yeah,
but, you know, hey, you got to try it, right?
I'm going to try it. I'll let you guys know how I do.
I don't know if it's legal. Keith, is it legal?
I don't see why I wouldn't be, sure.
There you go, right from the eel guy.
There you go.
But look, you tell me how that works, will you? I'd love to really know. I don't know if they were pulling my leg or not, but it certainly made sense that the blood attracted the eels and they glommed onto that bag trying to get that liver out of there, and then they don't have tremendous teeth, do they, Keith?
No.
No, little tiny
sandpaper teeth.
Yeah. And it would make sense that they would get tangled in the burlap bag, wouldn't it?
Right.
Alrighty. Well,
all right.
I'll report back to you.
Please do. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. See you. As far as eels for bait, Keith, 50 per day, right?
25.
Okay, I'm looking in the fishing guide.
There may be an exception for like a charter, you know, charter boat fisher, but it's 25.
Oh, that's Yaukagany Reservoir. Why does it say that? That's wait a minute, hold on. American eels as bait fish, minimum size 9 inches, open year round, 50 per day, krill limit. Now that is non-tidal. Let's look at tidal. My bad. 9 inches. Yes. Open year round, daily limit 25, coastal bays and Atlantic Ocean. Absolutely right. In Chesapeake Bay, 9 inches, open year round, daily 25 inches, 9-inch minimum size. Yep. Freshwater, though, Yaukagany Reservoir has a different limit.
Yeah, that's a little odd.
Okay. Let's talk to Dale in Easton. Good morning, Uncle Dale. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Alan. Keith, how are you?
How's it going, Dale?
All right. How'd you do last night?
Fair. 640. We got my team shot 300, though, so that was good.
I got to talk to the sponsors.
All right. Okay, hold on. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show, guys. And
it's a little inside joke.
Yeah, okay, that's great.
Keith touched on, Alan touched a little bit earlier on ASMFC, and it would be interesting to have him briefly discuss eel management, because a lot of people don't realize that we don't just go out and make regulations, not just for eels, but for everything that swims in the bay, basically, and leaves.
Yeah, it's number five on my list. We didn't get there yet.
And it's a very interesting process, to say the least. Complicated is one way to describe it. Frustrating is another way to describe it.
Sure.
But I think your readers would be interested in just Keith explaining what he has to go to as our representative on the technical committee with ASMSC with regard to eels, because it's an interesting process, almost like making sausage.
Oh, that's have you ever seen that done?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's okay. I got you. All right. Well, that's on our list coming up here shortly, Dale.
Okay.
So we'll talk about that, and we appreciate the as someone who knows, especially when dealing with dams and migratory fish like shad that you did for your entire career with the department. It's going to be interesting to hear here shortly.
Yes, it is. So, yes, it is.
All right, buddy.
All right, talk to you later.
See ya. There we go. Let's talk to Jeff in Baltimore. Good morning, Jeff. How you doing?
All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I wanted to ask your guest about this eel. I had never seen them and knew they existed in the waters, and I was fishing in Deer Creek up there near Eden Mill Nature Center up in Harford County a couple of years ago, and I'm looking down, and then they tend to use their nose out here to build these depressions in the water, and I looked down, and this thing was around 3 feet long, and I jumped up and did some cussing and screaming. I'd never seen such a creature. Pretty much ran out of the area. I was wondering how does it get that big? Does it keep going back and forth in the ocean to the freshwater, same place, or does it stay in the same place? How did it get to be that big?
Well, those eels actually don't. They don't, once the yellow eels, once they come into the bay or the streams, they stay here until they basically head back out to spawn. So they only do it one time. Once they spawn, they die. So that eel up in Deer Creek, probably was. Or I should say she, the males and females are much different in size. The females can grow, about 3 feet long, and the males don't get more than about 15 inches or so. So that was definitely a female, and that eel is probably, pushing 15. If it was close to 3 feet long, it's probably 15 or 16 years old. So it's been there a long time. They're residents, so they're fairly sedentary. They will stay in the same spot, but they occasionally will continue pushing upstream. There's no rhyme or reason, at least we don't understand it well enough to know why some continue to push upstream year after year and go as far as they can into freshwater. Others choose to just live in the estuary for their entire life. But that eel may have been there for well over 10 years.
it's
kind of amazing that some of the We have a survey here in Centerville. It's a first order stream, and the stream's not much wider than your arm's length. And some of the eels we get out here, and you catch 2.5 foot eels that are a pound and a half or 2 pounds. And you just think of such a small stream and the size of these eels that live in that stream, and they're kind of they rule the roost. You know, they're the top order predator in the small stream.
Wow,
getting that big,
yeah.
It's hard to believe something that big is living in such a small stream, but they do.
And they're eating. They eat fish and things. Are they aggressive?
They're not aggressive. It's funny. They don't bite, but of course we brought the eels back. Kind of funny story. My son was, I stopped back by my house on the way back to work and had eels, and I told him, I was like, hey, you can feel their teeth, and he put his finger in their mouth, and sure enough, the thing clamped down on them. But
yeah,
I've never, they don't bite, and they're docile. They're, when it comes to, they would never bite you. I guess you don't want to put your finger in their mouth, as my son now knows. But
no, yeah.
They can be aggressive towards, obviously, food, if prey items.
Sure.
They'll eat. They're food generalists, so they'll eat whatever's available. Dead carcass material, or they'll eat fish, frogs.
Or burlap bag full of liver.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
The depression they make with their nose, I guess.
Yep.
They really build quite a spot.
Right.
Kind of like a spawning bed for a bass. Hey, Jeff, unfortunately, we got to move along and take a short break, so I appreciate the call, buddy.
You got it.
All right, thanks. Stay tuned. Keith will be right back after this.
Don't be fooled by cheap crab prices. That's bull stuff. NBS Seafood offers live Louisiana blue crabs during the off-season. Avoid the pre-steamed, mushy, flavorless crab scandal. Get your live crabs at NBS Seafood. You can enjoy your crabs tonight. Cook your own crabs to unlock that special flavor that fresh steamed crabs are famous for. Just 20 minutes in your steamer, so good your taste buds scream. We even have the crab spice for you. Call NBS Seafood at 410-271-3202. NBS Seafood now has Chincoteague and Pocomoke oysters in the shell or by the pint. Maryland crab meat, live Maine lobsters, live crawfish, wild-cut Gulf shrimp, and many fresh and flash frozen delights, too. NBS Seafood has a roadside stand at 1223 Dorsey Road in Glen Burnie next to Jim Donnie's RV. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Friday, 2:30 to 6:30, Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 6:30. That phone number is 410-271-3202, 410-271-3202 for live crabs. NBS Seafood, no bull stuff sold here. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex at Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bedliner. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
Wild is calling. The Great American Outdoor Show, presented by Outdoor Channel, is coming to the Farm Show Complex in Harrisburg, February 1st to the 9th, celebrating the outdoor traditions treasured by millions of Americans. Over 1,000 exhibitors at the largest sports and outdoor show in the world. Plus tons of events for the entire family, including the NRA Country Jam. Start your adventure now by getting your tickets at greatamericanoutdoorshow.org.
Keith Whiteford talking about eels. And Keith, give us a little thumbnail sketch about what management shenanigans you've got to go through when you're dealing with eels in our Chesapeake Bay.
Well, the management, you basically, DNR manages our population,
right.
within Maryland.
Right.
But of course, eels don't just stay in Maryland, so they have a huge geographic range, and they cross a myriad of different jurisdictions during their course of their life. So
kind of like our striped bass up and down
exactly.
the coast. Yep.
So besides us, having our own management plans, you actually have a management plan through Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission.
Right.
They actually have plans for, I think it's like 22 species that obviously don't stay put in, within their state. So they,
sure.
they basically go across the jurisdictions and they have their own management plan, try to get cooperation among all the states, kind of to get them all on the same page with
sure.
Managing the species, and each state has, a technical committee representative.
We mentioned earlier about this glass eel harvest in Maine, and you said South Carolina's on that. Of course, that's big to their economy or somewhat big to their economy, and people are involved in the practice of that. So you've got to take all those little statewide things into consideration too, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's pretty difficult. I mean, especially with eel, you'll have you try to manage it on a coastwide level, but you have some areas that are, like Maryland, that have the population's been quite stable. We have a robust fishery.
Yep.
But yet, in other areas, the populations have experienced severe declines.
Right. So they're going to reduce that eel harvest in Maine.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. We're quickly running out of time, so I'm
okay.
trying to hit some of the high points. The glass eel harvest is going to be reduced by 25% after this year, correct?
That's right.
Yeah.
Maine, well, they're implementing their own management measures to reduce harvest from 2013 level. They're reducing it 25% to 40%. It was basically they were either going to do it themselves or it was going to be forced through AFC.
Yeah.
So they're choosing to kind of be proactive.
Sure.
When it comes to that. So.
All right. Well, let's take one more caller here. Frank has an eel story. And Frank, I hit the wrong button. Let's get me into Frank there and on line two. Okay. Frank, good morning. Real quick, please.
Good morning, Alan.
Yes, sir.
I'm 81 years old, and I've lived on Back River a long time.
Okay.
And I just want to say, did you ever do bobbin, which we would take and thread earthworms lengthwise
uh-huh.
on a silk thread, and then we would roll them into a ball, and that's the way we'd drop them over the side of the boat. And when you feel a nibble, you just yank it, and their fine teeth would hook into that silk. And in the boat, they'd come. And that's the way we were catching eels.
No hook on silk. There you go. Another one, Keith. What do you think?
I've heard of that. I've never tried it myself, but it's pretty ingenious.
Yeah.
It's almost the same as the burlap bag that you...
Yeah, right. Pretty much. You're depending on the eel's physiology there to catch them. So, thanks, Frank. I appreciate that. I'm sorry we have to go. We got way too much here to do. Another break to take before the end of the show. So, Keith, I think at this point we're going to have to say we thank you very much. You've educated all of us on the eel population in Chesapeake Bay and on the coast, the lifestyle, the commercial fishery, and I think we did a great job there this morning. So I appreciate you being with us, and I'm sure we'll be talking in the future.
Well, thanks for having me, Alan.
All right, Keith. Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye. Keith Whiteford, everybody. And we're going to go out with a commercial break. One more time, I've got to tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road. If you need it for fishing or hunting, firearms, fishing tackle and bait, stop by 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. 410-242-6108 or the fishing hotline 247-FISH. Every now and then, you tag a nice buck or a pretty drake duck, or you get a chance to go out west or Canada, Alaska, even Africa on a big game hunt. or your youngster bags his first deer or goose. Now you want to preserve the memory of that hunt and honor that trophy. Don Travis has mounted thousands of game animals from around the world at his shop, Travis Taxidermy, near Chestertown. Don's mounted over a dozen ducks for me, my best buck, my pronghorn antelope, with skill and craftsmanship. I wouldn't have it any other way, and neither should you. I like visiting my accountant, seeing his mountain lion, his coos deer, his elk, and his wife's African lion, all mounted by Travis Taxidermy. Is Travis Taxidermy the cheapest guy in town? No, sir, he is not. Nor is he the most expensive. In my opinion, he's just the best. For 40 years, Don and his crew have transformed skin and bones into magnificent creations that will let you relive the memory of the hunt for a lifetime. Call Travis Taxidermy at 410-778-4107 or visit TravisTaxidermy.com. Travis Taxidermy, 410-778-4107, exceeding your expectations for 40 years. If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto. The Doe Harvest Challenge is now statewide. Deer hunters, by donating your female deer, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. Now you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, and Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org. Hunters, you could win a $300 gift card from Bass Pro Shops in the statewide Doe Harvest Challenge. You can enter every doe you donate during all deer seasons. Maryland is divided into three regions with 10 chances to win in each region. Just donate your doe through an FHFH deer processor listed in your hunting guide and fill out the entry card. That's it. By donating your doe, you feed the hungry and please local farmers by reducing crop damage. The 2013 Doe Harvest Challenge is sponsored by the Maryland Grain Producers, the Soybean Board, Bass Pro Shops, the Farm Bureau, Farmers and Hunters Feeding the Hungry. For more information, visit FHFH.org. Hey, we're back. We got one more caller, Bill in Pasadena. Good morning, Bill. How you doing? Bill left us. Okay. Well, folks, that does it. Now, look, I gave tickets away to the Great American Outdoor Show last week. One caller did call in and give us his information. The other fella did not. If you were listening last week and I awarded you tickets, I need your address again. All right. Don't forget to check us out.